Hey everyone, and welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you being here. I just wrapped up a great conversation with Charlie Morris. Charlie is founder and CIO at ByteTree. ByteTree does a lot of research on Bitcoin and gold. They offer an ETF product that allocates both to Bitcoin and gold and weights the allocation based on volatility and a number of other factors. Very interesting concept though. Charlie is a very smart guy. He and I part ways on some of our beliefs about where Bitcoin and gold are going to have their roles in the future. But overall, he is very thoughtful and methodical in how he forms his opinion and conclusions. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. I know I sure did. Alrighty, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Charlie here. Charlie, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael.
I appreciate it. Well, hey, I know we're a little bit shorter on time than we'd intended, but looking forward to this conversation. Let's just cut right to the chase. Tell me about how you got into gold.
Well, gold, I mean, it's a weird one. It was 1999, and I just joined what we call the City, which is basically what we, you know, Wall Street, what you call the Wall Street in London. And I joined the financial service industry. I joined HSBC. Actually, I joined a firm called James Capel, which later became HSBC. And in 1999, gold was down at $255 an ounce. It had been running down for two decades. And there was a guy from Tocqueville Asset Management in Canada was doing a talk. And I didn't go to see that talk. He just happened to be at a conference, and I listened to him. And I just thought it was the most interesting thing at the entire conference. And he was making the case of, you know, all the stuff we talk about and read about today, money supply and, you know, inflation and fake inflation data and the decline of fiat money, all of these arguments. And being 29 years old, it was the first time I'd ever heard them. And I found that fascinating. And so I latched onto gold and became interested in it forevermore.
Interesting. And then how about Bitcoin?
So if you like gold, then you're bound to have heard about Bitcoin before most people. I mean, you found out about Bitcoin either because you were a techie or a libertarian or a gold bug. You know, one of those three things would have, it would have come across your desk at some point. And for me, it was 2013. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was 2012 because I rejected it, saying, "Don't be ridiculous. You can cut and paste electronic money, and just like photocopying a $10 bill." But then I realized I was wrong in 2013, and then I caught the bug.
And so you've been sort of dipping your toes, you're keeping your toes in both spaces, as I guess since. So how would you, my sense is that most wealth managers, financial advisors today don't understand Bitcoin because they never understood gold. They never had that light bulb moment that you had back in the late 90s with gold. How would you best articulate, this is like a thing I'm just trying to figure out, talking to everyone I can about, how would you best articulate the challenges with our current system that necessitate a monetary technology like gold or Bitcoin?
Yeah, so that's a really good place to start from. And, you know, before you worry about which one you prefer, the basics are they're both trying to do the same job. And you could argue that gold's doing it, who's been there for 5,000 years, and actually it's not doing badly at all. Obviously, it's underperforming Bitcoin because that's got a tech element to it. But they're both, you know, in the room, in the conversation to try and be protecting us from monetary debasement. Now, the traditional technique to invest money, because everyone knows that inflation is a thing, so that's why you invest. You have a balanced portfolio, you have bonds and equities, and that's fine. But, you know, when inflation comes along, that bond and equity thing stops working. You know, it's obvious why bonds stop working when there's an inflationary environment. And the other side of it is equities tend to go into these environments with a big bubble. And, you know, if valuations are too high and you get inflation, that puts downward pressure on valuations. So the really good example of this was 1972. We had a tech bubble just like today. It was the Nifty 50. The hot stocks were called Polaroid and Xerox instead of Facebook and Nvidia. But who cares? It's the same thing. It's humans and stock markets. Admittedly, they didn't quite have the dynamic of global power that they do today. But still, these were big, widely owned stocks. And they had a really, really tough time between 1972 and 1974. They were the best stocks on Wall Street. They made loads of money. They had high margins. They generated cash. But they went down. They went down a lot. They went down more than the market because they were in a bubble to start with. So when you get highly priced assets on the equity side, you get, you know, inflation comes along and it changes the discounted cash flow, right? So in a world with no inflation, and if I say to you, you know, give me $100 and I'll give you $200 in 10 years' time, you go, okay, that's a return. But suddenly, if we have high inflation, then $200 in 10 years' time might be less than the rate of inflation. And that's quite easy to achieve. So the rating on everything comes down. The valuation of bonds comes down, i.e. yields go up. The valuation of stocks comes down. So we look to alternative assets in such an environment. Yeah, Bitcoin is an alternative asset. Gold is an alternative asset. So is silver. So are commodities. So is art, wine, and other collectibles. But the thing about Bitcoin and gold is they're liquid. All the others, wine, is liquid, but it's not a liquid financial asset. And so, you know, the world's two most liquid alternative assets are Bitcoin and gold. And that's what's special about them. And the best thing, I was talking about bonds and equities a moment ago. And, you know, bonds are sort of low risk for cautious investors, and equities are higher risk for adventurous investors who want to make money. It's exactly the same with Bitcoin and gold. You know, Bitcoin's more like an equity in that terms of risk profile. And gold's more like a bond. So you put these things together, Bitcoin and gold, it's just like putting equities and bonds together, except this is a portfolio now that's going to work in an inflationary environment.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how do you think about, you said in like an inflationary environment, this is where assets like gold in particular, I mean, we have a longer track record of gold excelling and outperforming in those environments. And it stands to reason that that's a role that Bitcoin's going to play as well. But then I know one of the things on your website that it's talked about is that that Bitcoin and gold have tended to, over obviously just a short period of time, 15 years of Bitcoin's existence, move in different directions. How do you think about then allocating to those, and how do you think about, to the extent that you even do it, allocating into equities or bonds in less inflationary environments? Like, how do you think about this sort of mix of assets? Are you coming in and out of particular asset classes as you watch inflation numbers? I'm sure there are more variables than that, but what's sort of your methodology or mental framework?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, I've been in the portfolio business for a long time now. Well, since 1998. And I've always sort of come at it from two angles. One is you want to try and get it right. So part of it, you want to sort of say, okay, I talked about bonds and equities and Bitcoin and gold. That's actually my investment process. Now let's change gold to gold or inflation-linked bonds, tips. Yeah. Let's change Bitcoin to commodities, financial stocks, heavy industry, because those are all things that like a risk-on environment with a bit of inflation, yeah. Whereas gold and tips like a risk-off environment with a bit of inflation, and then bonds and real estate and high-quality stocks, things like Procter and Gamble or Nestle, these companies that make sort of toothpaste and stuff. You don't have more toothpaste when the economy is doing well. You know, you win the lottery, you don't go and buy more toothpaste. You use the same of whether you just lost your job or whether you just won the lottery. And then finally, you've got normal growth assets, you know, real estate, tech stocks, that kind of stuff, support services, industries. And I would allocate between those four baskets, or buckets, as some people call them, trying to sort of be overweight the areas where I think are most likely to succeed. So at the moment, I like the inflationary angle. And so I've got more Bitcoin type things, Bitcoin commodities. I've got a big bet in my portfolios in oil right now, oil stocks, oil services, oil pipelines, those sorts of things. We're overweight banks, European banks. That might surprise you, but actually banks correlate more with Bitcoin than people realize. And in Europe, they're dirt cheap and their balance sheets are super strong. And they're paying out all this money. They've been so regulated to death. You know, they finally got through the credit crisis, which was 16 years ago. 16 years of, you know, taking in all that customer money. So there's plenty of time to recover your balance sheet, and they've done it. Same is true in Japan. And I like Latin America and these things, but these are all things that are going to do well in an inflationary environment, more so than a deflationary environment. So most of my assets are there. And then, you know, also I own a little bit of everything. So even though I don't think it's very likely that we go to a low inflation, low growth environment, I still got some stocks in healthcare and stuff, just because that's good portfolio construction. I don't have much there, but I've got something, you know? So I try and populate all those areas, and I look for value. I'm a value investor at heart. And indeed, my approach to Bitcoin and gold is value driven.
So when it comes to, you know, assets like Bitcoin and gold, how do you think about, we were talking briefly about the ETFs, the Bitcoin ETFs prior to hit and record. How do you think about owning and custodying the real assets themselves versus, you know, an IOU or a paper derivative? Both, I guess this is sort of a multifaceted question, because it's one thing for an individual, as we said, to take custody of Bitcoin or to purchase gold coins or that sort of thing. It's a very different thing for a, you know, large complex organization to do a similar sort of thing. What's your approach to that, both individually and how you might think about companies doing this?
Yeah, so my answer, because, you know, by trade, I'm a fund manager, and I used to look after a lot of money for a lot of people. When I was at HSBC Asset Management. And, you know, there's no way when I was in that environment we could have bought gold and Bitcoin and, you know, shoved a chip in a drawer or something, or shoved some coins in the cupboard at the office. It just doesn't work like that. You've got to have serious custody. And so as a professional fund manager, I thought the ETFs were a fantastic solution for that problem, because you're basically turning Bitcoin and gold into a security, which can be traded, and it's got an ISIN number and these sorts of things. And so it very easily fits into your world as a fund manager. So that would be my main answer. But for a private individual who knows what they're doing with computers and so forth, then to store your own Bitcoin in a wallet makes a lot of sense. I totally get that. But I do think the Bitcoin network needs both. I mean, if you take the ETFs out of Bitcoin, it's a weaker place. It's got less capital. You know, the ETFs have brought in a huge amount of capital over the years. And they've been going, you know. Okay, Grayscale just became an ETF, but it launched in 2013. You know, the Swedish Bitcoin ETFs launched in 2015. And these took a lot of money in. So the ETFs own 1 million Bitcoins, but 800,000 Bitcoins they owned 2 years ago. You know? So
yeah,
it's they've done a huge job in sucking up about 5.5% of the world's outstanding Bitcoin. With gold, it's the same sort of thing. Like, I guess it's less complicated. You don't need to be techie to store a gold coin, but it is dangerous having valuable gold and Bitcoins in your home. And there's a lot to be said for using independent custodians or good solutions, which an insurance company would approve of, if that makes sense. But I know if you want to go totally off grid, that's fine.
So obviously at the Bitcoin way, our thing is self custody and predominantly, you know, individuals. But I completely hear what you're saying. I think there's a time and a place where it's not feasible, or there's, you know, something prohibiting that making sense in particular situations. I think the question for me a lot becomes like, well, what's the end game to this all? Like, are you in gold and Bitcoin because you want to accumulate more dollars, which is what a vehicle like the ETF would allow, for example? Or are you in it because you see some sort of a systemic problem with fiat currency that you believe the asset of Bitcoin and or gold, those assets themselves, are going to and somehow sort of usurp the value of the dollar, the pound, the euro? I know, like, Lawrence Lepard, who I know you did a webinar with last week, it was a great conversation you had. He's more in the camp, as I understand it, of fiat is dying and it's breaking, and that's why we need Bitcoin. You don't want more dollars, which is what you get out of an ETF if Bitcoin goes up. You want more of the asset itself. Do you have a similar base case to a lot of the, I don't want to call them doomers, because I think they see what they believe to be a real problem and they are looking for a solution to overcome that hurdle. Do you fall more into that camp, or see gold and Bitcoin as a means of preserving the fiat value of those assets? Does that make sense?
I'm here for real returns. Investing is we invest not to get dollars, but we invest to get value, to increase value. And value, obviously, if the dollar goes down by 5%, then value starts at 5%, if that makes sense. It's not exactly.
Got it.
So you've got to make real value over and above the risk-free rate of return. And that's what it's all about. And if you can keep doing that, then you're getting wealthier. And yes, there's a couple of things you mentioned there. And Lawrence or Larry, he's saying that the fiat money's going down. Well, he'd also agree that it's always going down. But he's saying it's going to go down more quickly than normal, right? It's been doing it for the last couple of years. And I'm a believer that inflation is coming back, because you see the arguments that inflation was transitory, is what the Fed was saying. And of course, part of it was, you know, the blocking of the Suez Canal and the supply chain nonsense from COVID. That's all, you know, more or less back to normal. And that's fine. But then the other stuff isn't. So the wages are still going up and oil's now going up, and along with food and other things. So inflation is going to be sticky, and it's going to be hard for them to fight it. So I think that, you know, a lot of the transitory stuff they were talking about has already happened. Yeah. You know, it's no longer, it's a secondhand car or whatever is no longer stupidly priced. It's back to normal. Is that about right where you live?
I think it's getting there. I haven't been looking for a car in a little while, but that's my understanding.
So that kind of stuff is more or less back to normal. The price of fertilizer and these sorts of things, they're no longer 10 times, or lumber or something. But, you know, the longer term trends in inflation are accelerating. And I think right here, right now, is as good as it gets. It's been coming down for 2 years. Obviously, the war was pretty unhelpful with the spike in oil, but it's been coming down for a couple of years, and that's as good as it gets. And I think it's just going to stay high, and rates are going to stay high, and there are too many bonds in the world. And, you know, there's the idea that my country's gilts or America's treasuries are going to be the answer. This is not 2008. We have printed too much money. There's too much outstanding debt, and yields have got to keep on rising. And that's what happens in an inflationary environment. So at some point, the stock market's not going to like it. And we've got to be thinking about having alternative assets. And I think liquid alternative assets are the special ones, because they can actually be sold at any time during in a crisis. We've seen Bitcoin have all these cycles up and down, obviously huge ups, but also huge downs. But it's always been a liquid asset in the 10 years I've known it. And gold, massively liquid. Gold's nearly as liquid as the S&P. So you've got these two things that even when it gets really rough, you can still trade them. And that's one of the reasons why they're so valuable. There's limited supply, and they're liquid, and they're well known, and they're trusted, and they're global brands. You know, it's not just you and I that likes Bitcoin or Bitcoin and gold or whatever, but the whole world has a similar view, particularly about gold. Bitcoin's a bit more controversial, but you know, the number of people liking it grows.
This episode of the Bitcoin Way podcast is sponsored by us, your friends at the Bitcoin Way. If you rely on a third-party or closed-source hardware wallet for your Bitcoin custody, you are compromising on how you store your wealth. The Bitcoin Way offers white-glove service to help you take full self-custody of your Bitcoin and sleep in peace knowing you've done it right. Like most Bitcoiners, we believe that your Bitcoin stack will one day be worth a lot more than it is today. Go to thebitcoinway.com to sign up for a free consultation with a member of our team. Don't delay on protecting your wealth and reach out today. So what is it that do you think that someone like Peter Schiff, who is a gold bug, and if you just eliminated some of the talk track that he has around currency, and you focus on the problems that he talks about and identifies, he sounds like a Bitcoiner, but he hates Bitcoin. I mean, he's very adamant that Bitcoin's going to zero and gold's the only solution. What is the delta between someone like yourself and someone like him who recognizes it, because he understands that Bitcoin is scarce, I think, is my understanding. He understands that it holds a lot of the properties that gold holds, with what I perceive to be incredible advantages of, centralization risk of gold, and, you know, it's digital, it's non-digital nature. Those sorts of things are advantages that Bitcoin has. What's the gap for someone like Peter, do you think?
I mean, cynically, and I don't know him, so I'm probably speaking out of turn, but I think he probably quite enjoys it. I mean, his Twitter following has gone up 1,000 times as a result of it. And everyone knows.
So you think he has Bitcoin on the side?
I don't know if he does or doesn't. I know his son does. But I know people who know him, and I think he just quite enjoys the whole thing, and it's worked out very well for him. But, you know, Bitcoin is still experimental relative to gold. And the question I had, and if you had heard the podcast with Larry last week, you know, gold is there. Gold is the world's alternative money, right? Which is what the central banks support. And Bitcoin's coming along saying, well, actually, I can do a better job for these reasons, which I'm sure you would know what they are. And but gold's already there. And so, you know, the idea is that someone like Michael Saylor thinks gold coming down and Bitcoin's going up. Someone like me would say gold is a low return asset that's going to stay up and Bitcoin's going to catch up. Yeah. And Peter Schiff is saying that gold's up, it's going to stay up and it's going to go up, but Bitcoin will probably fizzle out at some point. So I think those are the different views. But all of us are in minority camps. This is clear, Michael, that this is something that's not that widely understood. The vast majority of the world think fiat's great, they love bonds, and they think the stock market's a safe place to be at all times. So the very fact that you're a Bitcoin gold type person puts you in the minority. I think there are probably more people by value in the gold camp because that's where the central banks are and the world's jewelry market. You know, let's face it, half of the female population of the planet owns gold jewelry. So, you know, it's a big club, the gold club, even though it might not be as vocal on Twitter. But then you've got the Bitcoin club, which is quite large and growing. And actually the biggest minority is being in the Bitcoin and gold club, which is my club. So I am the true minority in this space.
So tell me a little bit about ByteTree. Your founder, I think chief investment officer. What do y'all do? And I think what I want to talk about is Bold. Yeah. And how that works. If you could explain what it is and what you all are doing.
Yeah, so Bold's an idea I came up with. I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you have been talking about gold for 25 years and investing in it on behalf of clients and so on, then you come across Bitcoin in 2013 and you build a business around it because we started doing analytics in Bitcoin and so on. And I've written so much about both things for so long that it crossed my mind that they should go together because they were in this, you know, just like bonds and equity should go together, Bitcoin and gold should go together. And I created an index called Bold, Bitcoin and Gold, and it's risk weighted, right? And so what does that mean? Well, basically an equal weight index would put $50 into Bitcoin and $50 into gold, and that's fine. But then you realize that the $50 in Bitcoin is a lot more powerful than the $50 in gold. So how do you get the balance right so they're the same? You risk weight. And so you look at historic volatility of the two, and you realize that gold's pretty calm, so you need quite a lot of it. Bitcoin's pretty noisy, so you don't need very much of it. And you end up roughly at three quarters gold and one quarter Bitcoin. And if you do that, your probability of losing $10 in each asset is about the same.
Okay. And right now it looks like, I think if I remember correctly, you're at about 75% gold, 25% Bitcoin is sort of the allocation. So let me give you two different circumstances. And I'm curious to hear how that allocation might change or your modeling might differ if one of these things happens. So one is if Bitcoin does begin to eat gold's market cap. So let's say we just see like a direct, inverse correlation between, you know, Bitcoin hits, you know, 10 million and suddenly gold or 10 trillion and gold's down at, you know, 2 trillion or 3 trillion or something like that. I know that's not your base case for what's going to happen. I'm curious though, how you begin to then think about, does Bitcoin take on more weight or because it's still a new enough asset and it's just taken off like a rocket. Do you pull back on it? How do you think about managing that sort of situation?
So I didn't do anything here. I designed the index and the index looks after itself and because it's all algorithms. It's a very simple algorithm looking at volatility. So in the scenarios you come up with, so gold's going to go down by 90% in market cap or 85%. What do you think would happen to volatility? Well, it's going to go up a lot. Mm-hmm. So gold's now a volatile asset, so the weight of gold in the basket's going to come right down. What's going to happen to Bitcoin's volatility if it went up five times? Well, if it went up five times if it went up like that, when gold came down, then that would be telling you that Bitcoin's becoming a higher quality asset. And I would associate that with lower volatility. So I think it would probably flip around. I think that we'd probably have 80% in Bitcoin and 20% in gold in that scenario. And we're doing this calculation every month. So if your scenario takes 10 years to play out, you know, each month we're just going to be becoming a bit more Bitcoin-y, as we have been since 2018. I mean, the weight of the index was 10 Bitcoin in 2018. It is now 25 because Bitcoin is growing up. And so this is a very simple idea. If you wanted to go to a desert island for 10 years, and the question is, what do you want, Bitcoin, gold, or bold, my index? I would choose bold because I'm going to come out with a good answer. Yeah. You know, either Bitcoin's worth zero or it's worth 10 million or something. Gold, we're pretty sure it's going to be, there's a small chance that what you say is correct. It's going to go down a lot. It's going to go up a bit or down a lot. But if you had the bold mix and rebalance the portfolio each month and you get paid to rebalance, because you're always selling the high one and buying the low one, which adds about 5 to 7% per year. If you do that, you're going to end up in a good place, even if one of the assets fails, because there's no chance both assets are going to fail. And if both assets do well, that's fine as well. So I think that there's a lot of good reason for bold. I didn't really design it for people to own in the normal sense and sort of hide in the garden, because it's an active strategy. It needs to be rebalanced. So you can't put it into a coin and store it, nor can you put it onto a hard drive and store it. So it's an active strategy. It has to be maintained. But that's fine. It was really designed for the wealth management industry. And, you know, when you asked earlier about, am I anti-ETFs? Well, no, I've got an ETF. It's called Bold. So, you know, it's listed in Switzerland and Germany and France and the Netherlands. And unfortunately, it's not in the United Kingdom because my government has banned crypto ETFs.
So this is sort of a divergent question, but I'm curious, do you think, or what do you think it'll take for sovereign nations to start putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet? And, or do you think it's happening today already? When do you think that's going to be like a more, if you think it will be a more common practice, when do you think that will sort of play out? Is that a, you know, a 5-year, 10-year, 20-year sort of thing?
So we've got El Salvador, haven't we? And there's bound to be one or two little countries who have done something and if it's just for fun. I'm sure some of them have done it for experimental purposes. But in terms of, you know, proper Bitcoin allocation, big size, serious investment bank, Western investment bank, I don't mean Western, I mean G20. I mean serious big investment bank, Russia, China, Brazil, or any of Europe or America, Canada, Japan. I just can't see it anytime soon. And I can't imagine one of them doing it on its own and trying to gazump the others. You know, I can't imagine the, you know, Bank of France coming along and saying, you know, piss off, Britain. We've got 10,000 Bitcoin and you haven't, or whatever. I just don't see that scenario. They're going to work together. And I really struggle with the idea that central banks will ever move away from gold, because they, you know, they own a lot of it. They own 17% of all the world's gold. You know, gold is underpinned, even without central banking, it's still a valuable market for jewelry and electronics and so forth. And you know, there would be more consumption in jewelry if it wasn't required for investment and alternative money. The price would be lower, but it would be relevant. I can't see the central banks changing their modus operandi when it comes to the gold market. I mean, China wouldn't be adding
do you think
the way it is. If there was a hint that they're considering Bitcoin.
Do you think though that there's an opportunity for sort of different game theory to play out? So Bitcoin in my mind is the faster horse because it's everything gold is, with the added benefits of low confiscation risk, or, you know, at least with individuals, you fully auditable, digital, you can send it around the world fast. Does a game theory play out in your mind that if someone does, you know, if the United States or Russia, or especially like a, you know, someone who we're less friendly with in the West, like Russia or China, if they were to come out and say, yep, we're adding Bitcoin to our balance sheet, or it just were to be uncovered, do you think that forces the hand of nations in the West to say, we can't fall behind on this, because ultimately we can't outrun the best currency, the best money? Or do you think it becomes just a fight of, okay, we're going to keep our gold. You're doing Bitcoin, and we're into the sort of new world, whole new world of figuring out what that looks like.
If the central banks came to Bitcoin, your scenario that you laid out a few minutes ago would come true. The market cap of Bitcoin would exceed the market cap of gold. I don't see why it wouldn't. I just don't see it. There's no need for it because they would have to pay so much. What would happen to the price of Bitcoin if, you know, let's say China came in first or Russia came in first, and then the other one agreed, and, you know, and then the West has to fight back, as you say. In that scenario, the price of Bitcoin would be very high very quickly. It would basically match gold immediately. And then gold's then got marginal sellers. And so the price of gold's going down. But the gold price of gold just made an all-time high. You know, so I can understand why a year ago people would have said, oh, well, you know, Bitcoin's really going up whilst gold's going down, and that's a problem for gold. But right now, both of them are at all-time high. And that's really fascinating.
And it is.
I prefer to think of it as bonds and equities. As I said, you know, you've got the low risk monetary asset, and you've got the higher risk monetary asset. Guess which one's going to make you money? The higher risk one, obviously. That's the point. otherwise, the lower risk one will be offering you a free lunch. So that's just very simply how I see it.
Makes sense. I think it is an interesting analogy to compare them as sort of the equities and bonds of sound money. So last question for you, because I know you need to head out in a few minutes. Just saw, and I don't know how to say the name of this company, Nylum Resources. It's a gold mining company out of South America. And they seem to have announced that they're going to acquire some 24,000 or 25,000 Bitcoin. I'd imagine a gold mining company understands the importance of sound money, you know, relative to most firms. What do you make of this development, if anything?
Yeah. What's happened to the share price? Did it go up on the news?
I think it went up on the news.
It went from 1 cent to 40 cents. That's a good reason to make the announcement, isn't it?
Now we'll see if they follow through or if they're just cashing out.
I think Peter Schiff's probably the PR guy behind it, I would think. He understands the power of
the directions. He's probably ripping his hair out. Is there anything, you know, any underlying message here that you're taking from that, or is it just, to me, it's not clear what their angle is. I just didn't know if someone who's embedded in the gold and Bitcoin spaces, you might have a thought.
I mean, I'm not a great believer in companies having big balance sheets with full of assets. You know, if I invest in a company that makes fizzy drinks, you know, I expect them to have enough cash to, you know, remain solvent. But when they've got too much, they should buy back their shares if they're undervalued. Otherwise, they should pay dividends. They didn't need to have big Bitcoin portfolios or gold portfolios or any other portfolios. Obviously, they need employee pension schemes and so forth. But outside of that, they just don't. So I'm just not in the club that really thinks that that normal operating companies, not investment companies, should be having huge balance sheets and doing clever things. They got excess capital, they should give it back to their shareholders.
Got it. Well, hey, I appreciate your time, Charlie. Why don't you tell people where they can find you online or anywhere else, things that they should look into?
Thanks, Michael. So basically, we've got our website is bytetree.com. That's BYTE. The joke is bytetree, you know, bits and bytes is a computer money tree. But no one seems to get that joke. But anyway, I thought it was funny when I came up with the name. And bytetree.com, we do a lot of things, but basically we've got a lot of research in crypto and TradFi. But, you know, a lot of what we do is free. We do a monthly on gold, a monthly on Bitcoin. And we could tell you how to rebalance your bull each month if you're interested. So sign up at bytetree.com. Lots of free stuff.
Charlie, I've enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for your time and hope we can do this again sometime.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Man, that's a wrap. Again, I appreciate you being here. Do me a favor. If you liked this episode, if you enjoyed hearing Charlie, please give us a like, subscribe. You can check us out on all the podcast apps. We really appreciate any support we can get. As always, if you want to check out the Bitcoin Way, learn more about self-custody and any of the IT services that we provide, you can go to thebitcoinway.com. Follow us on Twitter, X at at @TheBitcoinWay_. And you can find me on Twitter and X at @TheOtherMJordan. And my weekly Substack newsletter is blackhatbitcoin.substack.com. Again, really appreciate you being here. Until next time, this is Michael Jordan signing off.